Hello, and you're very welcome to a post-podcast budget special. I'm Ian Guider. We're joined this week by our crack political team, Michael Brennan, political editor, and Hugh O'Connell, political correspondent, to go through all the details and the fallout of Budget 2019. How was it for you? Did you feel your pockets are going to be weighed down with more money? And do you think we're getting value for money from spending? And are we heading for an election in the next couple of months? Well, let's talk to the people who were in Leinster House for a longish speech by Pascal Donoghue. Lots of announcements in it, Michael. I kind of thought he really threw the boat out on the spending side of it. For you, what stood out on that side of it? I mean, there was an awful lot. There was billions and billions for health, education and housing.
Yeah, it was very much a spending budget rather than a tax cutting budget, about 3.6 billion in extra spending and about 290 million in tax cuts. So the 10 times more on one side than the other. I suppose one thing that struck me watching the budget in the Dáil chamber was I looked up and the public gallery was only 2/3 full, and a lot of those are political staff and interns rather than members of the public. So it just showed how normalised our budgets have become. Yes, there's a lot of money here for different departments and sectors, but we are back to that sort of more normal political times, and I think that's in general a good thing.
Yeah, I've always said budgets should be boring, they should not be major set pieces. Hugh, just going through some of the details, you saw the housing announcements, the health announcements, the extra education. The government obviously with an eye on what's both popular but also recognising perhaps what they really need to address, and housing and health being the two big ones.
Yeah, I mean, I was really struck by the health budget in particular going up to 17 billion next year, which is it's a whopping figure when you think about it. It accounts obviously for the fact that there's been an overrun of 700 million this year, which will come translate into next year, and then extra spending on top of that in terms of issues like mental health. And we have to set up abortion services in this country, which costs about 12 million, I think. So, and in the housing area, there was, I think, a lot of people in the sector were pretty underwhelmed by what was announced. There wasn't really anything in there for renters, whereas there was mortgage interest relief for landlords, and that hasn't gone down well at all when you consider that the issues that people have trying to not only trying to find a place to live, but also then trying to afford the place that they're living in. And Fianna Fáil have been banging the drum for the spending that they've secured for for affordable housing, but that's coming down over the next 3 years. So there's nothing really in the short term which, to my mind, will do anything to alleviate the housing crisis. I mean, we know the big problem is supply, and that ultimately building more houses is going to solve this crisis. But in the short term, there perhaps needs to be more done in that area, and there wasn't really much on that front, I thought.
Yeah, the housing thing, it didn't seem to spark off, or at least in some of the coverage I spotted later on that day, it didn't spark off the big Dáil rows you would have had in the past around budgets and spending.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is it becomes a battle of statistics. You know, you have the government saying we're going to build 10,000 new or provide 10,000 new social homes. Sinn Féin say, oh no, you're already providing 6,000, so that's only a couple of thousand extra. It's very difficult to follow. But one thing I think that'll be interesting, there were concerns that this affordable housing scheme that Fianna Fáil was insisting on, 300 million over 3 years, that effectively it would be a chance for a couple of lucky householders to grab a discount on a house, and that would be it. From talking to civil servants, the vision seems to be that they will get an affordable house at perhaps a 40% discount, but ultimately they will be paying back that discount over time, a longer period of time. It goes back into the fund, and that fund is used to provide more housing. So it's not 300 million that will be exhausted in one go. The idea is it should replenish itself. So I think there's potential there for that, but this is all so complicated, and there's so many statistics. I think people are just a bit, they zone out a bit when they hear it.
Did they really miss a trick on housing? Because there's been so many announcements of late, and as you said, Owen Murphy is bamboozling people with the numbers of homes, possibly even himself at this stage, the number of announcements of homes being built. Did they really not focus on housing in this budget to the extent that perhaps they should have, given the resources they've raised?
Well, not to the extent I think that we expected. I mean, we were kept being told by Fianna Fáil it was going to be a housing budget, but when you think about, you know, what are the headlines out of this budget?
Granny grant.
Granny flat grant.
Grab a granny.
But also, I suppose, the The VAT rate, the restoration of the 13.5% VAT rate for the tourism and hospitality industry, that's kind of the big thing. There doesn't seem to be the big kind of policy response in terms of housing in this budget, other than a scheme which will be rolled out over the next couple of years. Perhaps they did miss a trick, but you know, ultimately we all know that the only way to solve the crisis is building more houses. And that is happening. I mean, there are being more houses built, but not nearly at the rate that's keeping up with the demand.
Yeah, what did happen to the Granny Grant flat? Because it was the Independent Alliance flagship policy for a couple of days. Then it seemed to be slapped down. Then it was back on the table again. Why? It just looked a little bit like bizarre, quite frankly.
It did. I think, look, it probably is a sign of one of the pluses of this budget, that a ridiculous idea like the granny flat grant, and even the even more ridiculous idea a couple of months earlier of the granny grant to get grandparents to pay them to look after their own grandchildren. I know you should certainly appreciate any help you get getting your children minded by grandparents, but There were all kinds of practical issues. I think it was helpful that both those were batted out of the park, but not good for Shane Ross that they came up with ridiculous ideas. It actually overshadowed some of the things they actually did get, like the doubling of betting tax. The likes of the big betting firms held that off for years, and actually it happened this year. So that was something that was an achievement, but all lost with the fuss over the granny flat grant.
It just speaks really to a lack of preparation on the Independent Alliance's part. They had no real solid policy proposal. Well, they had a list of policy measures that they would like implemented in this budget, and things that they wanted money directed towards. But there was no costed proposal involved here. I mean, one of the things that they said about the granny flat grant was that it would only cost between 5,000 and 7,000 per house. But you know, there's a pilot scheme running out in Clondalkin that we learned about this week, where it's actually costing about €50,000, and that's what it would really take to do these kind of conversions. So they were coming up with things on the fly. They weren't putting any real thought into it, no real policy documents into it, and they're not lacking in the kind of backroom political operatives who could put this stuff together for them or could help them on that front. But there didn't seem to be any coherence in and around what it was that they were trying to do and trying to achieve out of this budget. And as Michael said, they did actually get some wins in terms of the betting tax. I think it's a really significant policy measure. But John Halligan is kind of running away with that thing. Shane Ross doesn't really want to have anything to do with that, for example, which to my mind just speaks to the kind of the incoherence within the Independent Alliance. I mean, they bang on about not being a political party, and I think it's very evident now that they're not even much of a political alliance anymore. They're more just four sole traders, you know.
And I think it's another example following on from what you said. I think it's about 150 million extra in disability funding,
too, yeah.
which would be a big thing for Finian McGrath.
Finian McGrath is very happy about it, but I think on the primetime debate, if I'm not mistaken, with Mary McCallan, some of the audience shouted out they did nothing for disability, and there was just silence from Minister Ross at the time, which I think Minister McGrath mightn't be best pleased with.
Two things that I want to talk about it in a little bit of detail. The increase in the lower rate of VAT, bringing it back up from 9% to 13.5%. I would have been in favour of keeping it at the lower rate. I've spoken to a lot of hoteliers around the country. They are up in arms over it. It does raise an awful lot of money, and yet people still say, look, this is a subsidy and it had to go. I think this is something that could really, really come back to haunt in the next while, because hoteliers, restaurants are going to be facing the challenge of Brexit in the next couple of months. They're going to be facing a lot of international headwinds. I think this could come back to haunt the government. You know, are they going to suffer from this?
I don't know. It's a gamble. It's the biggest gamble of the budget, as I see it.
It's raising $560 million in a full year.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, right? To pay for all of the other things that the government wants to do. It is a gamble in terms of the extent to which you will annoy the hospitality sector, the extent to which you will annoy hotels, restaurants, hairdressers, etc. But we have to remember it was a temporary measure brought in 2011 or 12, I think.
2011.
Yeah. That was thought at the time necessary in order to give a boost to the sector, which was flagging in the wake of the economic crash. And it did do that. It created tens of thousands of jobs.
And all the extra tax revenues that came in as a result of people working in the hospitality industry, and the profits coming back in,
go back to what you said, though. It raises 500 million, and it was a temporary measure. And you know, if you're going to be spending more on welfare, if you're going to be spending more on putting money into people's pockets, if you're going to be spending more on health, on housing, you got to get the money from somewhere. And to me, it seemed as if you either do the one big policy measure in relation to that sector, or you look at doing things on carbon tax, and we'll get to that in a second, and excise duty on fuel. they didn't go for that. Maybe they should have, perhaps, but this was, you know, I suppose this was doing something that would inevitably have to be done anyway, and doing it now, and to what extent it annoys the sector, well, we'll find out.
Michael, carbon tax I want to talk to you about, because optically, announcing the budget and say we're not increasing carbon tax a day after you have a huge global report, which everybody accepts should be implemented and we should do things to try and stop climate change from getting any worse. And next of all, you have a young finance minister in Pascal Donoghue saying we're not going ahead with this right now. A Taoiseach saying we're not going ahead with this right now. A huge amount of young people out there are saying Ireland really needs to step up our response to climate change. And we just decide, nah, it's too politically unpopular with farmers.
Yeah, I think, look, at there. If you ever wanted to say, was this an election budget? In some ways it wasn't. But when they avoided increasing carbon tax, that's definitely with a view to avoiding a huge fuss, especially, I suppose, in commuter counties in rural Ireland. You have farmers putting diesel in their tractors. They've had a very bad year. You have hauliers who are facing a threat from Brexit. They're saying we don't want fuel costs. And then you have all those commuters. Because of our pattern of development, we have enormous amount of commuting going on. People filling up their diesel cars that they bought under the John Gormley era. And the notion of whacking an extra tax at a time when diesel has gone up quite a bit for international reasons was not going to run with the government. So they went for what they saw was the politically less difficult way of raising it on the hoteliers and restaurant owners, because it doesn't impact as many people directly. You may pay it when you book your weekend break, or you go down to your gastro pub for a dinner. You may have to pay a bit more, but you won't spot it as easily as you will when you go to the pump and you start filling up your tank.
I mean, it seems such a regressive step.
Well, yeah, it does. You know, you could argue as well, I suppose, that the VAT increase does kind of offset to some extent the tax cuts that for middle income earners will amount to about €20 extra a month. You know, to what extent are we kind of giving with one hand and taking with the other, and to what extent is it kind of just coming in terms of household budgets as kind of a neutral budget almost, is that they won't really feel the benefit of the tax cut, and they won't, but they will feel the hit in terms of when they go out for their meal on a Friday
and
or the weekend away.
I would say as well, Ian, like environmental politics in this country, as the Green Party have found, is not always a vote winner. Like we have, we had the problem for decades of raw sewage going into the sea. That is being sorted out in some towns, but it's still there. People often, you know, like to think they're environmentally conscious until you actually hit them in the pocket. And that's what you would have been doing with the carbon tax. You're asking them to pay more to reduce their emissions. And I don't think that public support is quite there.
It was interesting though, because there was a couple of vox pops that where there was a few punters given out about the fact the government had done nothing on the carbon tax. Now, maybe they're not impacted in the way that farmers down in rural Ireland
might have been outside the Lewis station.
It's still relevant though. Something that is gradually seeping into voter sentiment, very, very gradually, very, very small level, but it just is indicative, I think. You would never have heard a budget vox pop 10 years ago, people giving out about, they didn't put up the carbon tax or they didn't put up fuel duty to combat climate change. But people are seeing it now. We've storms this week coming. People are seeing the impact of climate change on their daily lives now. So, you know, they're starting, I think, to come around to this idea that we do need to do something about this, and that involves increasing taxes. So I think it's unavoidable in the next budget.
Just on the tax package, and we'll get to some of the other things like Brexit in a moment, but on the tax package, what is it? $291 million is the spending on changing the US C-band and various other things, such as the threshold for before you pay the top rate. I would like more money in my pockets. Everybody would. Who wouldn't want more money coming back, given the way we have had 10 years now since the financial crisis? However, the rational bit of me said, this budget, last year's budget, and the one before that, Michael Noonan's last one, the tax packages, five a week is the effect for most people. I think we shouldn't be getting this money back. It should be going back towards either debt reduction or investing in real things, such as broadband, the national broadband plan, and various things. The idea that you would only give back a small amount of money compared to the $800 million that was left plus the $700 million he raised. So instead of the 2-to-1 spending to tax cuts, we ended up with what, 4-to-1, 5-to-1?
Oh, it's almost 10-to-1 in some ways, you know. But I think, look, there is a reality for the government. They've gone for big spending hikes, and you cannot do both. You cannot have the big spending hike and and a big tax cut. At the same time, Fine Gael have based their electoral platform for many years now on, remember, the party that would abolish the USC, that has gone by the wayside. So they need to, as a gesture to that, you know, broken promise, continue to reduce taxes a little bit. So I suppose Pascal Donoghue's argument a lot of time is he's trying to hold the centre, he's trying to keep the populists at bay. And one of the ways he's done that is giving a tiny little bit of tax.
You'll barely buy a spice bag for what you're getting back.
But you saw, I think, one of the newspapers this week ran an arresting headline about how people on the dole were getting more than people at work. You can imagine what the headline would have been if, for example, the social welfare and pension rates were up by a fiver and there was no tax cut. Yeah. So it's that balancing act.
Politically unavoidable, really.
On Brexit, and we're heading into the big EU summit in the next couple of weeks. You wrote, Michael, last weekend that this was a budget that would Brexit-proof the economy. Now, I'd be of the view that if we end up with a no deal, nothing will Brexit-proof any economy, particularly the British one. Looking at some of the schemes, I was left a little bit underwhelmed. I don't know what a human capital fund is. It sounds like a nice technical title. Look, I'll give them 10 out of 10 for preparing compared to the British government, who haven't done any preparations. But is this really a Brexit-proof budget? Another loan scheme that may or may not get a take-up, and this human capital growth fund?
Yes, I can tell you about that human capital fund. Effectively, there's a national training levy on employers. There's a big surplus in the fund. So they're now going to raid that and put it into something called the human capital fund.
Is that just another more money into the education budget?
It is. It's effectively, you won't believe it's not third-level fees. You know, that's the substitute for doing something on third-level fees. But it's very difficult. You're right in the preparations. A lot has gone on. I think the difficulty in this budget is it's actually calculated. They have said in the budget documentation it's based on effectively a soft Brexit scenario. They're expecting a deal and a transition period of 2 years in March, and then a free trade agreement, a good one after that. If that doesn't happen in March, then all bets are off. And a lot of these expensive spending rises, even the public sector pay rises, you would have to say, you know, will they be affordable in a couple of months' time? So fingers crossed that that all transpires as they hope it will.
Let's talk politics of the budget for the moment, because the economic side of it we could spend another couple of hours talking about and debating. Who politically was the winner for this? Where was Fianna Fáil's hands in this? Did Fine Gael get the better of them? How did the Independent Alliance come out of this?
I think that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil would both reasonably be happy with this budget. It's the kind of budget that they could both be proud of. Well, not proud of, but so much, but that they could go to the country on a budget like this and it wouldn't do them much harm. I think, like, the budget's been so vanilla, and there's a reason for that, you know, in terms of it's not the big bang that it used to be, because we have things like the summer economic statement, we have the EU fiscal rules, we have the tax strategy papers which come out. So we always kind of know where it's going. And of course, we have the diligent work of myself and Michael and all the other journalists who chase budget stories every year. So we kind of know what's coming.
I'm letting that slide by without a smart remark.
And we kind of know what's coming in the budget by the time the budget's announced. So, you know, the drama has gone out of it. But, you know, you can definitely see that the Independent Alliance haven't won, or at least they haven't sold their wins very well. But you can see that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil both get a little bit out of it, that if it turns out that we do end up in an election situation before the end of the year, no one's going to be giving out to them about the budget. You know, contrast that, for example, for when there was an awful lot of pensioners really annoyed with Fine Gael and Labour in the run-up to the 2016 election, when I think they only put €3 on the pension. Like, that really annoyed an awful lot of people and made them vote for Fianna Fáil in the end.
Yeah, I would broadly agree. I think you always look at the opposition reaction, the Dáil, to this budget. And, you know, firstly, you have to take away a chunk of the opposition, because it's Fianna Fáil and they were involved in the budget. So then you're down to Sinn Féin, Labour and so on. You know, there were complaints about why are we setting up 500 million, putting it into a rainy day fund when it's raining in so many other areas. Complaints about the mortgage interest relief, you know, improvement for landlords. But the opposition found it, quite difficult to find something that would really annoy the public. And I found it astonishing, again, watching the primetime debate, to see Pascal Donoghue being challenged about the VAT increase by a hotelier in Mayo, and Ruud Coppinger of Solidarity effectively coming to Pascal Dunhu's defence and supporting the VAT increase.
You
know, that was a moment of political history. So I really, you know,
it really is centre ground politics. Yeah,
and I'll give you another little example. I was at the budget press conference for Regina Doherty, the Minister for Social Protection, and a journalistic colleague of mine who would be well known for criticising ministers who didn't give something back to the needy. Started by saying that there'd been a very good reaction to the budget minister, and I felt from then on there was going to be, you know, no difficult things for Regina Doherty. So a completely different picture to 10 years ago when you were cutting child benefit and welfare and so on.
Those days are over for now.
Can I ask, actually, I want to, one of the things I want to make a point about is I was looking through the budget documentation and I listened to the speech and I went off to do a bit of radio afterwards, and it struck me the size of the spending increases to me seemed extremely large. And I listened to Pascal Donoghue saying, if you look at the cumulative increase between 2014 and now, it was nowhere near what Charlie McCreevy and then Brian Cowan did between 2004 and 2008. And yes, he is right when you look at those numbers. However, if you look at the increases compared to what the economy could be facing, yes, we're in a great spot right now, but we spoke about Brexit, you could have all sorts of trade wars next year. To me, his reputation as Mr. Prudence, Mr. I will be cautious, I will be conservative with how I spend it, to me, that went out the window this week. And on radio last week, I was in the Last Word studio when he was being interviewed with Matt Cooper, and he put it to him, look, you're increasing all of the spending. Why aren't you looking at what we spent last year and getting more money rather than increasing the budgets by this amount? Has Pascal's reputation as the safe pair of hands taken a bit of a hit? Or will that just be, look, we needed to do this in case there's an election?
I think he's tried to cultivate that reputation of being prudent and of, you know, warning of the need to prepare for the rainy, you know, for the rainy day. So we got the rainy day fund. But he's a politician, and the political reality of a situation where the economy is booming, when unemployment is at very low levels, with more people employed in this country now than we've ever had, you have to give back a little bit for workers who have gone through an awful lot over the last decade in particular. So that's the politics of it. That dictates that he can say that he's prudent and he can do what on the face of it looked like prudent things. But he's ignored the advice of the Fiscal Advisory Council.
Everybody does.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it was set up for a reason and the government routinely ignores it. Is that a good thing? I don't know. There's other economists warning that we shouldn't have had as expansionary a budget as we've had. And my point would be that at the end of the day, okay, you're putting 500 million a year into the rainy day fund. But, I mean, we've been through a crisis where the National Pension Reserve Fund of, I think, 15 billion plus.
It used to be at one stage 21 billion.
Was gobbled up very, very quickly. So, you know, to what extent he's preparing for the worst, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, it definitely, when you see those spending rises, it's a fair point to make. Is this prudent or is this preparing for an election? But there are big pressures out there. I think I was asking people in the run-up to this budget, could you give me a figure for how much the departments have asked for? And apparently it was billions and billions in excess of anything that anyone could afford. So the pressures are there, but health is still a big worry. I think they've got their 1.2 billion or 1.7 billion extra.
Yes. Yeah.
And like repeatedly they keep overspending. So, you know, there's always, he pleaded in his budget speech for value for money from the health sector, but that's becoming a hardy annual as well. So I think that's a big concern, because politically ministers and government cannot refuse the HC, it appears, when they overspend, because they know there will be trolleys out the door, there will be all kinds of things cranked up on them and which could affect their re-election prospects. So it's that getting control, that seems to be a really big problem.
I want to wrap this up now, because we could, again, spend hours, if not days, talking about it. And you can read, of course, a lot more about it in the paper on Sunday. But just a final word from you guys. Were you bored, ecstatic? Were you overwhelmed, underwhelmed by Budget 2019?
Bored.
I have to say, I'm afraid I'm always interested in budgets, even if they're not as spectacular as some of the ones we've had before.
I think I will fall down on the side of bored but a little bit interested. Michael Brennan and Hugh O'Connell, thank you very much. I've been Ian Guider, and we will talk to you all very soon.